Lani is a sophrologist based living out here in Raglan, doing work in Hamilton at the moment. And we should start, of course, as always, with the what is sophrology question, just for people who haven't heard the phrase before or the word before.
Yeah, sophrology is a technique that's well known in Europe, continental Europe, but not so much in New Zealand. In fact, I'm the only sophrologist in New Zealand pioneering the technique in. So a sophrologist studies the whole person, the mind, body, spirit, breath, and consciousness to identify human experience and behavior. So in working with my clients, we focus on your whole, the structure of your existence, and working with all of the, all the aspects of who you are and what makes you you.
Does it fit generally in the category of mind health, would you say?
All health, you know, physical health, mental health. When we talk about mental health, most people are talking about mental illness, but every human has mental health. Every human has, just like every human has physical health. So talking about mental health is different from talking about mental illness. And a lot of people, will talk about mental health in a negative way when it's just an aspect of who you are.
Okay. Hey, I don't know if I ever asked you this, but like you say, sophrology is well known in Europe, but obviously we can tell from your accent and your location that Europe's not your place. Where were you when you discovered it?
I was here in New Zealand, actually.
Here. Right.
Yeah. I had basically retired from my life in the States and moved over here with my husband to be closer to children and grandchildren who had come over. And then in that space of retirement, you know, you have I had 3 years of what do I do now with myself? Who am I? You know, that transitioning strategy late in life. You don't know. Well, not late in life, but middle life. You don't know who you are and what you're doing because your roles have switched.
Yeah.
And I stumbled onto sophrology just by accident and, just having a lifetime of feeling like I needed to be in a coaching space, but not really resonating with any of the strategies that were out there. So when I came up on sophrology, it was exactly what I had been looking for such a long time because it aligns with the Western science and Eastern philosophies. So bringing your anatomy, your physiology, all of that into existence along with Eastern, you know, meditation and Taoism and Buddhism and yoga and all of those strategies. So it wasn't just one or the other, it was both. And that was what drew me in. And then I did the study and work, and I did all that through COVID, which I did online.
Right.
And because I was supposed to go to Switzerland to study, but couldn't. And so the qualification, now we do everything online like what we're doing right now.
Yep.
And I ended up as a sophrologist in New Zealand. So, yeah.
Would you like the chance to get to Europe at some time to mix it with other sophrologists?
I would, yeah. It'd be really, really nice. There are a few sophrologists in Australia.
Yep.
And it would be nice to actually create a strategy more specific to the South Pacific. The technique is adaptable to culture. There's a certain firsthand knowledge and life experience that goes along with sophrology, and to be able to adapt it to the culture. Like one of the things that I've done in New Zealand is attach it to the Maori health models of Te Whiki and Te Whare Tapawha.
Yeah.
Those are some Maori health models that they're trying to implement and utilize in the health system here in New Zealand. And they talk about it when you go into courses like caregiving and counseling and health and well-being. They talk about it and teach it, but they don't actually tell you how to implement it in your caregiving with clients. Mm. So I've actually gone through the health models and created a compare and contrast and how sophrology actually aligns with those Maori health models. And we could use sophrology to implement strategies of Te Whiki in day-to-day caregiving in the health industry.
So. Yeah, it's always, I guess it's always easier. Like you're an individual, and it's much easier for you to pivot and do something a bit different. But with we know about bureaucracies. It takes them a very long time to change even direction a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So,
and to work out how to implement the concept. I can see that taking them a while.
Yeah, which is part of the reason why I'm. You know, there's polarization in everything, and so my overseas certificate doesn't qualify me to join the boards or membership associations for, like, social work and counseling and psychology here in New Zealand, even though that's what I do. In fact, I kind of go beyond what they do.
Yeah.
because I'm doing whole person strategies. And so because of my overseas qualification, I don't fit in the parameters of policy and procedure, which then allows me to be more creative in my treatment techniques and the coaching strategies that I use with my clients.
Yes, you'd have to establish a national body and do those sorts of things and lobby at government. And you might need a few people beside you for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, so... go ahead, Lani.
Oh, no, that's kind of an issue with a lot of alternative health strategies, like Robin Youngson, who does havening. He's kind of in that same arena he's got this amazing strategy that really works with trauma, and yet he doesn't qualify to be, you know, to go within the boards and sit in their associations to help them understand how havening can actually be beneficial.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of that strategy.
So what were we going to talk about today?
So in sophrology, I talk a lot about awareness and what we do to become aware. So part of sophrology is meditation. We, along with my coaching and the discussion that I have with my clients, we'll do meditation. But the meditation that we do in sophrology is, there's balanced breathing, there's gentle movement, and there's creative visioning. So we're not just sitting in one position during sophrology. We're actually doing a lot of movement. We're engaging with the body. We're becoming aware. So a lot of times in the meditation, in the narration, I'll say become aware of the physical sensation in your body, or become aware of a certain emotion, or become aware of color, or, you know, what have you. And so we talk about a lot about awareness, and we don't necessarily understand awareness in that type of capacity. Like, what exactly is awareness? Why do we use it? And what is the benefit of becoming aware? So I thought that's what we talk about today.
Are we living our lives unaware? We must be aware of something at any moment if we're conscious.
Where awareness is more about being in a neutral space, so not attaching anything to it. So, like, in regards to pain and pleasure, for example, and like in your body, you become aware of pain, but you don't put any judgment onto it. So you don't you have a headache, and so you can either become angry with your headache, or you can become neutral with your headache and be like, okay, I sense that I have a headache right now. What do I need to do with, you know, to self-care and to take care of my headache? So awareness is just about becoming aware and being neutral in that space of awareness, being patient with the situation. And because when you do that, awareness generates choice. So you can actually go on to respond appropriately to whatever is going on.
So I'm trying to think, like, we seem to have a problem with being aware.
We do, actually.
Yeah.
because we think too much. Awareness is not thinking. Awareness is, again, neutralizing, coming into a space of neutrality and just being restful, sitting there, noticing, and then being able to identify, okay, what's the next strategy I should actually be using? We tend to a lot of times, like, for example, we'll jump into is an area of complaining. A lot of negativity goes into complaining. You know, with the weather, or somebody said something you didn't like, or you don't even like the clothing that so-and-so's wearing today, or you saw somebody walking down the street and they, you know, you didn't like something about their appearance, and so you would say something. And so that's not awareness. That's actually judgment.
Right.
Putting way too much thought, putting way too much personal emphasis on whatever's going on. And it puts a lot of negativity into your mind, into your body. You don't realize it at the time. And the emotion sits with you for much longer, and also the senses, like what you're sensing. So that image of that person that bothered you, you know, just because you saw that person, you didn't like what they were wearing or how their hair was or whatever.
Yeah.
Later on in the evening, you're sitting there going through your day, and then all of a sudden the emotion of how that felt when you saw that image comes back up for you, and you remember it because your brain holds on to that. So being in a space of awareness allows you to be non-judgmental. It allows you to be present. It allows your body to just have a break from all the emotion. Your brain is constantly processing all of these sensations that are coming in. And so by being in a space of awareness, it just allows you to just be patient in the moment and recognize without responding and recognize without reacting.
So we tend to think of this sort of problem we have with in this area as being a very modern thing, but meditation's been around for centuries, and the spiritual practices you referred to earlier have been around for a very long time too. So there must be something, I don't know if it's innate to all humans or develops, I don't know. Yeah, is it like that? Is that something that we always will struggle with?
It actually is, just because of, have you heard of, this is like a totally another different topic,
yeah.
But intergenerational trauma,
yeah.
and epigenetics and yeah. the genes and your DNA. So intergenerational trauma sits in your DNA, and so what happens with that is something's happened in the history of your ancestry, and they've had to create a strategy for adaption to protect themselves. And so that strategy is within you. So it could have been, you know, something quite traumatic, like, okay, we'll use a personal example. I have an ancestor who was a bodyguard, and he was racing away from danger, and people were shooting at him with guns.
Yep.
And so the fear of that, and he had to create some sense of adaptability, or the body created some sense of adaptability. So just before he was able to disappear out of range, a bullet grazed his ear. And so his body, then his nervous system, all the systems of his body registered that pain, that discomfort, that emotion, everything that was going on. And so through the years, so that happened four generations ago,
yeah.
And through the years, the DNA has come forward to where all of us, well, not all of us, many of us in every generation have suffered from ear issues in our left ear. So that's an example of intergenerational trauma, and how back in his time, when he was actually going through that, he experienced that, and his body created an adaptable strategy. And that adaptable strategy has resulted in many generations going forward of dealing with disease and discomfort in the body. And that's an example of how we attach to negativity, because we have this adaptable strategy in our DNA because of past experiences that we don't even have flashbacks for. But these past experiences, the adaptability shows up in the body as like heart disease and diabetes and, you know, all of these things. Because when we go to the doctor and the doctor says, do you have family, you know, what's your family medical history?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, where did that all come from? Well, it came from the body adapting to trauma. over the centuries and years that we've all lived.
We should. Can we explain what epigenetics means and maybe contrast with genetic determinism?
A little bit. I'm not an expert on it, and I haven't studied it much. But so we have our DNA, then we have our genes, and then epigenetics basically is, the way I've understood it, is it's kind of dormant in our body until something comes up that is a reminder to the systems of our body. For example, alcoholism. You may have ancestors in your bloodlines who used alcohol as a strategy to disengage from whatever pain or discomfort they were having in their lives. And so many generations later, you've not been exposed to alcohol, but then as a teenager or as an adult, you decide to start drinking. And the epigenetics then flares up and goes, oh, I remember this sensation, this feeling. And so alcohol becomes a strategy. You then go back into that adaptability where alcohol was a defense mechanism. And it becomes that for you because your epigenetics now is awakened to this sensation that has come through over the years.
Yeah. And
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And for anyone who wants to actually know more about epigenetics, you can find a book by Bruce Lipton called Biology of Belief. He was kind of the pioneering researcher that brought that about and changed. The field genetics had been very about genetic determinism at that point. So
yeah,
it's quite significant.
I'm halfway through that book.
You're halfway through, right, yeah.
Yeah, just learning about it. But it's fascinating. It's amazing. And it changes what you do with your life and how. And it also helps you recognize and become aware of, oh, this is in my body for this reason.
Yeah.
I don't need it to be there. You can actually change the course of history. You can cleanse that and clear it by doing these meditative strategies.
Right.
You can cleanse and detox your body. You can cleanse and detox from that DNA. It doesn't need to move forward into the next generation. Unfortunately, it's too late for me because I've already had my babies. But my grandchildren and my children who have not had children yet, they can put a stop to these ear issues and they don't need to carry forward in future generations.
Can you put a stop to it for yourself?
I can for myself, yeah. Yeah, through the meditation and the awareness and all of the strategies that I use and teach and things like what Robin's doing with Havening, you can make it stop. The trauma can go away.
Yeah, yeah. So should we go back to awareness? Because that was the main topic. Awareness is to be patient with polarization, you've said to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been, I think that's quite topical at the moment. There's a lot of polarization out there with all the various things that have happened over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us about this.
To be able to stay neutral. So polarization is in all things. It's necessary. We need to recognize that there is a difference between hot and cold, and there's a reason why things need to be hot, and there's a reason why things need to be cold. It's all there for a purpose. There's opposition in everything. And so by us becoming aware of, like, for example, as I said before, the pain of something, you can become aware in your body, oh, I have pain in my head, or perhaps you're a soccer player and you've rolled your ankle and you have a pain in your ankle. But there's other parts of your body that are not in pain. So you can, in meditation or, in becoming aware, you can toggle between there's pain and discomfort in my ankle, but there's no pain or discomfort in my shoulder. And you can go back and forth and toggle between pain and pleasure until it becomes a neutral strategy, until the body starts to hear, the brain starts to respond to this. And then you're not so much focused on the pain. And you're also not so much focused on no pain, but you're in that neutral space of there's a little bit of pain, but I can handle this. And here's what I'm going to do for that pain. I'm going to ice it. I'm going to sit and put my leg up for a while. I'm going to take some Panadol to release the inflammation. You know, you can you can then start to go through your options. What are my choices here? What can I do to create more of a stable environment for this pain that is going on in my ankle?
I guess,
so that's polarization. You neutralize it. You come into a neutral space.
I guess people might be saying, well, hold on, what if the pain is too great?
Well, it can, because if the pain is so great, I mean, you're still recognizing the pain. You can still, it's not about releasing and becoming and having no pain, because that's going to the other opposite. It's about neutralizing and coming into a space where you can then address it. If the pain is too great, then at least you're in that space of, I actually should call a doctor right now because I don't think I can handle this. But if you're in such pain and discomfort, your body is stressing, you're hyperventilating, your heart is racing, your blood pressure is up, all of these things are going on. Your body is, the cortisol and the hormones that are rushing through your body are keeping that pain at a higher intense level.
Right, okay. All right. Hey, I actually want to go back to your story about the ancestor four generations ago who had basically an injury to the ear coupled with a strong emotional event. It's kind of rare to have a story like that you can trace so accurately. Do we need to be able to trace things so accurately when we have unpredictable illnesses?
No, not necessarily. Because the illness is in the body. So if you go back to Bruce Lipton, and there's a lot of videos on YouTube as well with Bruce, and learning these things. When you go back and you have a look at that, or even in the strategies that I teach, or the things that Robin does with Havening, you can actually deprogram or reprogram the brain and the body to cleanse it, to clear it, and to think differently. So we might refer to them as memory capsules. So the amygdala, the hippocampus, these parts of your brain, these memories, they come and they sit in your limbic system, in your brain. And so being able to utilize meditation and other alternative techniques, you can cleanse those memory capsules and make them dissolve. So when we talk about a capsule, you might imagine a pill that you put into water and it dissolves, right, in the water and it goes away. And that's kind of what is happening with these memories. They're in your nervous system. They're in the systems of your body. They're causing the heart disease or whatever type of illness it happens to be there. And you can actually release from these memories without having known what they were. Your body is experiencing these memories like depression, mental illness. We don't necessarily have a history of that in our immediate family. And so, you know, I might have a child who's suffering from depression and be like completely confused because, you know, we're not all suffering from it. So where is it coming from? We want to apply it to our present day life. But actually what we can do is go back and look at that intergenerational trauma and those adaptability strategies and recognize what's going on. I mean, you may have children who are suffering from panic attacks at very early ages, stages of their lives, when there's really no need and no reason for them. No, there's no explanation for this. So they're actually experiencing the trauma of the event that they did not experience. So they don't have flashbacks of the trauma, but the trauma is in their body system. And that's what the biology of belief is with Bruce Lipton and what he talks about.
What would you do with the child who's experiencing that?
The default is always start with breathing. It's such a simple strategy that it's almost like, no, that's too simple. It can't actually possibly be the reason or the cure, or not a cure, but
a strategy,
a way to, it's a way to bring you into a state of awareness, basically. when you can just, you just go into a space of breathing, taking in some deep rhythmic breathings, you know, inhaling, exhaling, just coming into the body, allowing all of the systems of the body to calm and relax. And then you can address, okay, why did we have that, you know, what was the trigger for the panic attack? And when you, you know, if these are recurring and ongoing, you can keep a journal and then start to identify what the triggers are. So then you can address it in a helpful way with a practitioner and actually resolve the situation.
Yeah, okay. Look, I wanted to keep talking about this, but I'm running out of time. I've got some other things I've got to do. We are talking to Lani Puriri about sophrology and talking about awareness, how to improve your awareness. But have you got some workshops coming up, Lani?
I have one workshop coming up. It's starting on the 7th of July. It's actually going to be held at the YWCA in Hamilton. And we're actually going to be looking back into our lifetime and creating what we call a tree of life, using some reflection and telling some positive stories about ourselves. And we're going to draw, we're going to make some art and make a tree, and, you know, with all the elements that happen, starting with our roots, where we come from, how we, you know, how we got to where we're at, and just looking at our lives in a positive way and creating some art while we do it. So that's coming up on the 7th of July. Currently, I'm just getting in the process of, I'm, you know, technology for me is like the last thing. Oh, yeah, I need to put that on my website, or, oh, yeah, I should post that about that on social media. So the best thing to do if there's an interest is to email me, sophrosolis@gmail.com. So that's spelled S-O-P-H-R-O, sophrosolis@gmail.com. Or I'm on social media at sophrosolis. And I can give you more details and information about that event. And, we're just going to do that. It's a 6-week, once a week event that we're going to do as a workshop, and hopefully make some trees and create a forest and have some good conversation while we're telling our life stories.
And if people want to read more about this topic, can they use your website as a kind of a starting point for that as well?
Also, no.
Also, no. Okay.
Unfortunately, the core work that I do is working with people, and I'm not the greatest at keeping my website updated. So I've got to, you know, be better at creating blog posts and posting about things. And
well, we can just suggest people like some keywords to look up or search on, I guess, if they want to read some
just,
more.
Awareness and polarization and neutralizing your emotions, you know, these are things. And if you're interested in looking at Bruce Lipton and epigenetics and intergenerational trauma, he's an expert. He's got amazing things to talk about. So, those are things you can look up. But awareness is just coming into a space of neutrality, and we start with breathing when we do that.
Okay, Lani, thank you heaps for your time this morning, and we will talk to you again in a few weeks.
Yep, okay. Thanks very much, Aaron.
Okay, folks, that was Lani Puriri. And we're going to have a little break and come back. We're going to talk about events happening this weekend after this.